It's Monday, September 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, the Group of 20 Nations Leaders Summit opens in China with a climate change agreement and some apparent snubs. Controversies weigh on both U.S. presidential campaigns.
We're going to be dealing with this at least into the middle part of the week.
A powerful storm churns along the eastern United States. Also ahead, sainthood for a beloved nun and a small robot goes to school to help children. It's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Barack Obama is telling China it needs to adopt a more responsible role on the world stage and adhere to international norms. Before he headed off to the G20 summit in China, Mr. Obama told CNN in an interview broadcast Sunday that Beijing needs to show restraint in its relations with smaller countries, especially as it deals with territorial disputes in the South China Sea. The American leaders said that with increasing power comes increasing responsibilities. Obama said the U.S. has urged China to accept international rules that build a strong worldwide order. China, which is a signatory to the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, recently lost an arbitration dispute at the court in The Hague over the South China Sea, but rejected that ruling. The court ruled China had violated Manila's sovereign rights by interfering with the Philippine fishing and oil exploration activities in the area. Meanwhile, the United States and China have both formalized their ratification of the Paris Agreement. That's a key step by the world's two biggest polluters that aims to help bring the climate change accord into force this year. President Barack Obama and Chinese President Xi Jinping announced the deal during a meeting in Hangzhou, which is hosting this year's G20 summit.
We are here together because we believe that for all the challenges that we face, the growing threat of climate change could define the contours of this century more dramatically than any other challenge. One of the reasons I ran for this office was to make sure that America does its part to protect this planet for future generations. Over the past 7.5 years, we've transformed the United States into a global leader in the fight against climate change. But this is not a fight that any one country, no matter how powerful, can take alone. That's why last December's Paris Agreement was so important. Nearly 200 nations came together as a strong, enduring framework to set the world on a course to a low-carbon future. And someday we may see this as the moment that we finally decided to save our planet.
President Obama praised the climate agreement as a path forward to progress in other important areas.
Of course, the Paris Agreement alone won't solve the climate crisis. But it does establish an enduring framework that enables countries to ratchet down their carbon emissions over time and to set more ambitious targets as technology advances. That means full implementation of this agreement will help delay or avoid some of the worst consequences of climate change and pave the way for more progress in the coming years. This is the single best chance that we have to deal with a problem that could end up transforming this planet in a way that makes it very difficult for us to deal with all the other challenges that we may face.
Chinese President Xi said that he hoped the announcement would benefit everyone. China's state media announced early Saturday that its National People's Congress had approved the decision at the closing of a week-long meeting. A report by the state-run Xinhua News Agency highlighted China's commitment to confront global warming and play a bigger role in global climate change governance. As China's Group of 20 Nations Leaders Summit kicked off on Sunday, a commotion on the tarmac during President Barack Obama's arrival and a series of other disputes continued to provide some distractions. When President Obama arrived in Hangzhou Saturday, the airport did not have airplane stairs ready for him to disembark from Air Force One. And when he did step off of the aircraft, the red carpet provided for other arriving leaders was missing. Tensions were also high on the tarmac, where a Chinese official screamed at White House press photographers as they tried to get into position to take pictures of the president. A White House official tried to intervene, stating that the United States would set the rules for where the photographers positioned themselves, but The Chinese officials yelled back. And that was just the beginning of several more tense incidents, which have not been limited to President Obama and his traveling press entourage. Last week, when reporters traveling with Secretary of State John Kerry tried to apply for visas to come to China and attend the G20, their applications were denied without explanation. It's time for us now to check out what's buzzing online. And to do that, our social media reporter, G. Abby Lee, is back with us here in Studio 22 to do just that. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim.
Well, what do you have for us today?
Well, let's start with First Lady Michelle Obama. She surprised a group of college kids here in D.C. Saturday by speaking at a back-to-school event.
Was she at Howard University?
That's right. Mm-hmm. Not too far from our studio, maybe a 50-minute drive, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right. She visited the HBCU with other celebrities, Nick Cannon and Seth Meyers. And HBCU, of course, stands for Historically Black Colleges and Universities. And Howard is actually ranked number 2 in the national HBCU ranking by the U.S. News and World Report. But I digress. The university is on Twitter at Howard U, and it sent out this tweet. We couldn't be more proud of these hashtag HU2020 students who have been selected for FLOTUS's Reach Higher initiative. She told the class of 2020 students that going to college was one of the most impactful things she's done in her life.
Wow, quite a statement. Mm-hmm. What else is trending?
Celebrated American singer Beyoncé turns 35 today. I almost said 25 because she looks it. Hashtag happy birthday Beyoncé is trending on social media.
And before you go, tell us about what people are saying about the G20 summit in China.
Sure. Like you mentioned earlier, there was quite a bit of commotion on the tarmac during President Obama's arrival. And after Air Force One landed in Hangzhou, a Chinese official attempted to prevent Mr. Obama's national security advisor from walking to a motorcade. And when things got pretty tense, a Secret Service agent stepped in between the Chinese official and Susan Rice. And people are sharing a short clip of the official saying, "This is our country, our airport," to an American official.
Did Ambassador Rice tweet from China?
She did. She sent out a rather formal one on Saturday. She wrote, "We are in Hangzhou, China, for at POTUS's final hashtag G20 summit. Learn more about hashtag G20's role in economic growth since 2009 and left a link to a blog post on the White House website. That's all for me today. Jim?
Well, a great wrap-up, G. As always, thank you. And you may find myself and G on Twitter at VOA Stevenson and at G. Abby Lee. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, the Taliban warns India over military aid to Kabul. Major election in Hong Kong with calls for independence. The currency war fears prompt G20 to act. Singapore confirms 27 more locally transmitted Zika cases. Bangladesh hangs Islamist leader for 1971 war crimes. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at our voanews.com website. And if you have a smartphone, you'll find them as well on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Republican presidential contender Donald Trump has edged closer to his Democrat rival Hillary Clinton in U.S. presidential election public opinion polls just 3 weeks ahead of their first face-to-face debate. Several U.S. polls show Mrs. Clinton, a former U.S. Secretary of State, ahead of Trump, a real estate mogul seeking his first elected office. But he has cut her lead to about 4 percentage points or less, about half the gap of a few weeks ago, even as she continues to narrowly lead in several battleground election states that likely will determine the outcome of the November 8th election. Numerous U.S. political analysts are still predicting that she'll become the country's 45th president and its first female commander-in-chief, replacing President Barack Obama when he leaves office next January. But the analysts have narrowed the odds a bit in recent days. And the uncertainty of the race coincides with our Labor Day national holiday, the traditional point at which many families end their summer vacations, send their school-age children back to classes, and perhaps give new attention to the presidential election race. There was new attention to Mrs. Clinton's handling of emails Friday as the Federal Bureau of Investigation released an account of its probe and an hours-long interview with Clinton. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman has been following developments and joins us in the studio.
Jim, the saga of Hillary Clinton and her use of emails, her use of electronic communication during her time as President Barack Obama's first Secretary of State, is the story that will not go away. It has dogged her for months. And just this past Friday, the FBI released 58 pages of notes from 3.5 hours of interview that was conducted in July, shortly before the FBI concluded that no criminal wrongdoing had been committed, at least as far as the FBI could tell. But the FBI director came out with a fairly damning statement about carelessness on the part of Hillary Clinton in using a private email account to conduct official business, in storing data on a private server outside of the State Department. And of course, a great deal of that information was lost because that server was wiped clean. The FBI came out with 58 pages of notes, and there are things that that don't look terribly favorable. Here's the bottom line. The FBI doesn't know whether, in fact, any classified information fell into the wrong hands, be it Russia or China or anybody else, but it certainly can't rule it out. And there's nothing in these pages that is sort of a smoking gun as far as criminal activity. But there's nothing that's terribly reassuring about how the Democratic nominee for president handled sensitive information during her time as Secretary of State.
And repeatedly, Mrs. Clinton has said that she did not do anything wrong, at least knowingly. It doesn't paint a great picture for handling sensitive information, and that's what her opponents really are focusing on, is the way that this was handled, as opposed to any substance as to what was in the actual emails.
Jim, in a sense, it sort of undercuts Hillary Clinton's main claim to the presidency. She is the person of experience. She is the person of competence. She's the person who's been around the block. She knows how the system works. And when you have something that just sort of goes on and on that just won't go away, and it seems like every couple of weeks there's a new batch of emails that are released, some new detail in terms of how she conducted herself, it does tend to undercut her central argument that she is making to voters.
Talking about being fit for office, certainly Mrs. Clinton had the opportunity to discuss Donald Trump's recent trip to Mexico, where he has famously been talking about building a wall and having Mexico pay for it. And then the president of Mexico says, no, we're not paying for it.
Jim, there was something surreal about last Wednesday. I mean, here you have a Republican candidate for president who essentially waltzed to the Republican nomination on the idea that Mexico presents a threat and that America needs to build a wall to protect us from that threat, and needs to deport something on the order of 11 million undocumented immigrants from the United States. The Mexican president during the press conference said very little and sort of let Donald Trump dominate the stage, but then said that no, in fact, they had discussed it and that he had made clear to Donald Trump that Mexico will not be paying for any kind of wall. And that was something that the Clinton campaign definitely picked up on.
Well, ultimately, it comes down to the voters, and the American public will decide which candidate is most fit to hold office on November 8th and most fit to tell us about the race and all of the developments. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman, who joins us every week. Michael, thank you.
Thank you.
The first of three scheduled presidential debates is set for September 26th, with the other two in October. U.S. voters hold historically high unfavorable views of both candidates, with surveys showing that many of them are more inclined to vote against either Trump or Clinton rather than specifically favoring one over the other. Pope Francis has declared Mother Teresa a saint in highlight of his Holy Year of Mercy Sunday during a canonization ceremony in front of tens of thousands of people at St. Peter's Square. Mother Teresa, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, was known during her lifetime as the Saint of Gutters for her work among the poorest of the poor in India. She arrived in Calcutta on January 6, 1929. Small of stature, the Albanian nun opened missions of charity in more than 120 countries, aided by several thousand nuns and over 1 million volunteers, and led an austere life of her own. She died September 5, 1997, at the age of 87. The Roman Catholic Church has more than 10,000 saints, many of whom were not elevated to sainthood until centuries after their death. The U.S. National Weather Service says that Tropical Storm Hermine is once again gaining strength and could regain hurricane force, posing a danger of life-threatening inundation from New Jersey to Connecticut. As of midday Sunday, Hermine was far out to sea among the mid-Atlantic coast, but close enough to be pummeling coastal areas. The storm is now heading north by northeast. It's expected to take a turn, a northern or northwestern move. Residents in states as far north as Connecticut are expected to feel its damaging impact. VOA's Lori London speaks with Dennis Felchin, a meteorologist and spokesman for the National Weather Hurricane Center in Miami.
A tropical storm warning has been issued for parts of southern New England as Hermine continues to meander off the middle Atlantic and northeastern coastline tonight. It's centered more than 300 miles to the south-southeast of the eastern tip of Long Island, moving slowly to the east-northeast right now at 5 miles per hour. It's expected to turn slowly to the north and then and continue moving north for the next few days. So we're going to be dealing with this at least into the middle part of the week. Right now, a tropical storm warning extends north at Fenwick Island, Delaware, all the way up to Sagamore Beach in New England. And that includes Block Island, Martha's Vineyard, and Nantucket.
Is this storm expected to strengthen again and potentially cause a lot of damage on the eastern coast of the U.S.?
Maximum winds right now are 70 miles per hour with higher gusts, and it is possible that it could inch up just a little more with the winds reaching hurricane force within the next 24 hours. The key to all of this is the fact that although the NHC forecast track has shifted a little bit eastward today, there's still the threat of tropical storm conditions, coastal flooding, and large waves along portions of the mid-Atlantic and northeastern states during the next couple of days.
Is there any way to know where it's expected to do the most damage?
The tropical storm warning is the area that needs to be focused on, and that extends from the coast of Delaware all the way up to the southern reaches of southern New England. There is a possibility of life-threatening inundation from storm surge during the next 48 hours on the north shore of Long Island, east of Flushing, and on the south shore of Long Island, east of Rockaway Inlet. The storm surge could be as much as 1 to 3 feet above normally dry ground.
Wow. And we're just getting into the peak of hurricane season, correct?
We entered the peak of the hurricane season in mid-August and last until about late October. It's that eight-week period, what I like to call the season within the season, where the vast majority of tropical storms, hurricanes, and major hurricanes occur. The season officially ends on November 30th.
Are you expecting more potentially dangerous storms like this before this is all over?
We're only at the halfway point of the hurricane season. I guarantee that there will be more hurricanes for the next 3 months. Now, who's going to be impacted by that? No way to tell.
Hard to believe that Hermine was the first hurricane to strike Florida in more than a decade. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who is going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This is VOA's International Edition. A small avatar may help children who are recuperating from a long-term illness and feel isolated from their friends and classmates. It's a robot that takes their place in school. From home or the hospital, the children can hear their teachers and friends and even take part in class. VOA's Deborah Block has more.
This is AV1, an avatar that represents a child who is recovering from a long-term illness and cannot go to school. The robot is carried between classes by the child's friends and is placed on the desk where the child usually sits. It was developed by a Norwegian firm, appropriately called No Isolation.
So it sits at the child's desk in the classroom, and the child uses a tablet or a phone to start it, control its movements with touch, and talk through it. So it's the eyes and the ears and the voice at school.
From home or a hospital bed, the recovering child can also participate in class.
It has speakers and microphones and cameras. And when the child speaks at home or in the hospital to his iPad, it just comes out.
The avatar was designed to be resilient, water resistant, and tough enough to withstand a fall from a desk. Inside AV1 is a small computer.
And it's connected to the phone network, 4G. That is connected to a small card that controls the robot.
There's a reason for its size and slightly humanoid appearance.
It can't be just a tiny camera because the other kids can't pick it up and take it with them. This is supposed to be their friend.
The robot just became available to the public, helping some children feel a lot less lonely. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to International Edition, and you can always find us at our website, voanews.com. If you happen to be online, check us out on Facebook at VOA Now and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. For director Tracy Carter and engineer Daryl Smith, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Thank you so much for spending part of your day with us. We hope you have a great day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States helps to ensure the free flow of commerce through, among other areas, the strategically important Strait of Hormuz, which connects the Persian Gulf to the Gulf of Oman and the Arabian Sea. Approximately 20% of the world's oil, vital to the global economy, passes through the strait. Recently, there were several incidents of harassment of U.S. Navy vessels in the Gulf by Iran, and these irresponsible actions by Iranian naval forces are causing concern. At a press briefing, Army General Joseph Votel, head of U.S. Central Command, warned that such episodes have the potential for dangerous escalation. He himself, he said, personally witnessed an instance in July when the USS New Orleans was transiting the Strait of Hormuz.
An IRGC, Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps missile ship, and three fast attack crafts demonstrated aggressive behavior in the vicinity of our ship. In recent days, we have witnessed even more provocative activity by the IRGCN Navy vessels. That type of behavior is very concerning, and we hope to see Iran's naval forces act in a more professional manner.
General Votel said no other country does what Iran does in the Gulf.
They don't go out and they don't drive fast boats towards military vessels out there in the same way that they do. Nobody else does that.
General Votel praised U.S. naval forces for their measured response to Iran's harassment, but he warned that such behavior is dangerous and called on Iran to be professional and act in a responsible manner. The problem has been created by the attempt on the part of Iran's leaders to exert their influence and authority, General Votel said. This is not about the Iranian people, he added. It's about the Iranian regime and their desire to continue to do these types of things that stoke instability or attempt to stoke instability in the region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.